Welcome to the No Sports Report, a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. My name is Jensen Karp, and I'm a sports fan. How big of a sports fan? Well, I'm currently studying the teams and storylines I'll need to know about in order to watch Korean baseball. It's the first league playing again, and they're airing 7 games a week on ESPN. For the record, I'm a Samsung Lions guy. So for the time being in America, I've decided to talk to athletes and sports industry professionals about what they're doing in quarantine, hoping to figure out if they miss competing as much as I miss watching it. This is the No Sports Report. Do you remember that movie where Mark Wahlberg is the lead singer of a cover band, and then the band he's covering needs a new singer, and then he's hired as the singer of that original band, and it like blows everyone's mind? Well, Ronnie Singh has kind of lived the sports version of that movie. You may know him as Ronnie 2K, the digital marketing director and corporate face for the extremely popular NBA 2K video game franchise, which, in 2019, had the biggest launch of any sports video game in history. Yes, even more than Blades of Steel. From just August to February, the game had sold over 8 million copies, well ahead of their already mind-numbing average of 10 million per year, especially since quarantine has only put the title in more homes. But Ronnie 2K wasn't always in charge of the game. At one time, he was just a big fan and asked to run their online message boards while he worked a day job at a law firm. Then as technology evolved, he ran their social media accounts, and now he helps run a literal empire, hobnobbing with the NBA elite, actually appearing in the game as himself, and becoming a staple every season, as the guy players complain to on Twitter when they find out their in-game rankings. And proving he's not yet done, Ronnie became an ESPN announcer and analyst last month for the NBA 2K Players Tournament, actually aired on the channel and featuring superstars turned gamers like Kevin Durant, Donovan Mitchell, Montrezl Harrell, and eventual champion Devin Booker. In this episode, we talk about what that was like, his surprise beefs, and some suggestions for NBA 2K21. I also chat with Dr. Myron Roll, a retired football safety who played at Florida State and was drafted by the Tennessee Titans in 2010. Since leaving the game, he's become the neurosurgery resident at Massachusetts General Hospital. He's been on the front lines for COVID-19 and has some thoughts on getting back to normal life a little too quickly. And now, a jam-packed episode of the No Sports Report.
Call from
Ronnie 2K.
To accept, press 1. Press.
I wanted to start off just by asking you where you're quarantining right now. I know you're originally from the Bay Area. Is that where you've been spending these few months?
Yeah, actually, I've lived here most of my life, actually. So it's pretty crazy that the 2K office is also here in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've been at home, which usually I'm traveling like a crazy person trying to promote this game and this franchise. I've been home for the last 2 months straight, and it's been a nice change.
I'm sure. And I know that you are holed up with hundreds of sneakers, but who else is with you during quarantining? Who's talking back to you, at least?
I mean, I talked to my sneakers, actually, and that's pretty much it. No, I actually, it's just me and my dog trying to, obviously, like everybody else, social distance. And the nice thing is the game's a great outlet to socialize and talk to other people that play 2K. So if I've ever needed to socialize, I just get on the game.
Absolutely. We currently have 14 to 16 hours to fill a day. You're one of the only people I'm talking to for the podcast that is just as busy during quarantine than they are not in quarantine. So is most of your day being spent online? Has the pandemic affected your workday at all?
Just affected the format of the workday, like continuing to figure out how to market, you know, next year's innovations as we look ahead to 2K21, mm-hmm. but also to continue to market 2K20 and play the game and live stream and play with our fans. And obviously the NBA 2K Players Tournament a couple weeks back was a massive endeavor, producing that thing from my very bedroom and trying to put on a show on the worldwide leader on ESPN was quite a thrill. It was quite a lot of work, but I mean, it was kind of an amazing project.
Sure.
Again, one of the biggest reasons that we're doing this is we feel a responsibility to, you know, entertain people that are sitting at home and need something to be entertained by. And everybody's missing basketball. I'm missing basketball so much. We'd be knee deep in the playoffs. It was 2K's responsibility to step up and try to fill that void mm-hmm. by letting NBA players play, you know, the game that we all love to play.
Yeah. And when you release 2K 20, when you released this past year, you obviously never would have known that come April, you'd be the only basketball that anyone could get involved in. When did you start to realize how important 2K would be for the fans that are having the jonesing that you and I are having about sports?
I mean, I think it was right away. I remember watching the last game and how weird that was and the way that they shut that down. You know, Pelicans Kings was about to tip off. People were actually in the arena. And then they decided very intelligently to not start that game. I think it became pretty obvious right away that 2K and our amazing offering of in-game events and in-game content, and we had to step up there. We've always wanted to innovate, and we always have. Mm-hmm. But it became kind of a moral responsibility. And then you know the 2K Players Tournament has kind of been a dream of ours collectively to kind of find out who the best NBA player is at 2K. And it became an opportunity to, find out that very thing while these guys also, wanted to continue to compete. And we were the platform for them to do that very thing.
Sure. And what kind of spike were you guys looking at in playing? Like, has it affected the servers since you keep track of that kind of thing? Has it just jumped up?
I mean, yeah, there's definitely a lot more people playing. Again, we recognize that a lot of bad things are happening in the world, but, people have needed to stay home, and gaming is a great way to stay entertained and distracted and play out the life of an NBA player in our world. And so we've definitely had an increase in people playing the game, which is wonderful. I'm just glad that we're participating and keeping people safe and healthy and at home.
Totally. And you are the liaison between the NBA players and the game. You're the one who's being yelled at courtside that their ratings aren't high enough. You verify players that are in the game. Has that went up? Have the NBA players that aren't able to go work out or practice or scrimmage or whatever, have they been playing the game more?
That is a great question. Yes, it's dramatically increased. I mean, I think, like I said, our game is a device for competition. You step up and you want to be the best. That's what these guys have been groomed to be since the first time they laced up their basketball shoes. They have to satisfy that somewhere. And a lot of these guys have played 2K, played it, when they had a lot more time around training. And I feel like this vacuum of time has just increased the need to do so. So definitely a lot more verifications. And it's not just basketball. It's across entertainment. A lot of celebrities have been reaching out, a lot of people in music, a lot of people in football as well. I also think that, like, these guys see gaming, you're asking the right questions, which is how many more eyeballs are there on this world? And I think that the influencers and the people that play our game that are, known entities also see it as a way to get their message out. I mean,
absolutely, yeah.
A music guy that's used to touring in the summer, he does not have the capacity to do so. So how can he involve himself in our platform to continue to get his message out? And I think that a lot of people are leveraging our game to, continue to build their own brand and their empire.
Listen, I'm a huge Ronnie 2K fan, so I can shout out the idea. I could shout out the idea that all this publicity about Travis Scott showing up in Fortnite, you guys have been doing concerts and DJ sets in the playground for quite some time.
Yeah, it's very cool what Fortnite is doing. Obviously, we had Puck After Dark and the NBA 2K17, but as an industry, again, we have a responsibility to entertain, and across the board, we're finding our different ways of doing that, but it's just important to deliver this kind of content. I mean, where else are you going to see, high-profile NBA players like Kevin Durant and Trae Young and Donovan Mitchell? But, Donovan Mitchell and Kevin Durant were two of the first guys that had coronavirus, and for them to participate and show that they're okay and communicate with the fans and give, the capacity to interact and socialize and talk about what they went through was such a great thing for the world to understand. Like, these guys, these high-profile athletes are, just as human when it comes to what we're facing. And, it was a platform for them to be able to tell that story.
Totally. So the NBA and, as a result, NBA 2K are both sort of the most culturally relevant aspects to video games, at least the most connected to the streets. So have you guys made any updates to the game to reflect the pandemic and what's going on around us?
Yeah, we wanted to support the messaging that everybody's got out there about social distancing and, making sure that you clean your hands and all the other health, positive messages that we can. So We put some signage in the neighborhood, which obviously is our open world, and everybody that plays our game is usually in there at one point or another to help promote that message and do our part. We talked about responsibility and that stuffy part of it.
Can they wear masks?
No, they cannot.
All right. I'm just throwing out ideas. You guys usually update stats real time from games with moment cards and sort of reflecting stats that go along with the games that are happening. Do you guys just turn that off during this?
Not really. We've kind of pivoted and started thinking about like historic moments. And, you know, we also had Kobe Bryant's 4-year anniversary of his 60-point game, mm-hmm. celebrating that mode with a free content, a pink diamond card that celebrated that last game 4 years ago. So to have, you know, celebrate those kind of moments is just as important. And obviously grasping the attention of NBA 2K fans everywhere.
Totally. Will players be able to kind of work the 2020 playoffs out in the game? Like, are you guys going to sort of set up the standings to be the Lakers up top with the Bucks? And I mean, is there going to be a way to play that out?
Yeah. So we did a playoff simulation. We actually, the very day that the NBA season ended, we picked up the season as it continued to go along, simulating literally every matchup for the rest of the regular season. Mm-hmm. And the battle for the 8th seed in the West was really hot. I think it was Blazers and Grizzlies, if I'm not mistaken, which was probably what was going to happen. You know, the Blazers were a few games back, but they had the easier schedule. So for, you know, in the last day of our simulation, they were battling it out. We're continuing that as the playoffs go along, and we intend to, you know, have our own champion, assuming that the NBA season doesn't come back and crown a real NBA champion.
How much of your day right now is figuring out what NBA 2K21 looks like? Like you guys are so reflective of a season and what goes down. Like, this is going to be different than any game you've ever produced.
Yeah, and we're also jumping generations this year as well. Mm-hmm. So obviously the new consoles weigh in as well. So it's going to be a very interesting year, but we're very excited. It's a massive grind for our development team to think about, you know, next year's innovations and stuff. But that process is continuing, and we're trying to be as authentic to the game as we always are every single year.
I'm very excited to see Dr. Fauci in story mode. That's my goal here.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the NBA 2K tournament really quick. You've touched on it a bit. 16 players, $100,000 of charity for the winner. We had a winner with Devin Booker. He won it all. What were some of your highlights of what went down?
Wow, there were so many. I mean, I think, you know, the facility of seeing people that trash talk but aren't mic'd up all the time, these NBA players, that was fascinating. I mean, Patrick Beverley was definitely the darling of the tournament just because he took on like 17 different caricatures. He was just amazing to listen to, but so thoughtful in his delivery as well. And I think that was the biggest thing, is like these guys still had a competition raging and they were going to kind of trash talk and play the game. And also they had such a passion for the game too. And it was interesting because I wasn't as aware of Devin, and I've seen him play a couple times. I guess if there was anybody that was close to knowing how good these guys were at the game, it'd probably be me over the years, seeing these guys at different marketing functions and whatnot. But every year the game innovates so much, so I really had no idea. I actually had Trae Young or Patrick Beverley winning the whole thing, and neither guy made even the finals. So, you know, just the high level of quality, ability of the game, and for it to end up as two Phoenix Suns in the final, and that was kind of cool to watch two teammates play where you wouldn't normally see them battle it out. A real locker room kind of look, like these two teammates are playing in 2K. I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Sure. Where would Booker stack up with pro players, the esports pros? Where would he sit?
You know, I say this a lot, but I think that the NBA players have one advantage, which is they ingrained over the years have so much knowledge about off-ball movement and the random, like just the play styles and the offensive and defensive philosophies of teams. Mm-hmm. But I think that they have a advantage there. I've watched NBA players that have literally never picked up the sticks and been actually pretty decent in our game. And I just think that they understand how people move without having the ball in their hands. And that's a big key to our game, which is hard for, you know, a regular consumer to understand. Our esports gamers, though, our NBA 2K League pros are amazing. They are incredible. We have done a lot of vetting, and, you know, they make it through the combine and are the most heralded gamers, you know, 3 years running now as we head into our third season of the NBA 2K League in the next couple of weeks. on the 5th. What day is the 5th?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's all one day to you.
Yeah.
I get it.
I mean, I think during this time, all sense of the weekday has gone out the window for everyone. But they are very, very impressive. But, I mean, could an NBA 2K player who plays our game just over the years and plays it a lot, could they maybe make the league one day? I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. I definitely do.
You are a broadcasting professional now. We have to get into you joining the ESPN ranks.
Am I? Really?
You are, dude. That's the way it goes. You get a badge and everything. What did it feel like doing that kind of play-by-play and all those throws and showing up on SportsCenter? I mean, like I said, I am a Ronnie 2K head. I know when you were probably back working at the law firm, I'm not sure you thought you'd be on ESPN. what was it like joining the team?
I mean, a dream. Beyond a dream. Like you said, I never thought that would happen working in a law firm, you know, before my career at 2K. But I mean, I was like most any other kid that loves sports. I'd come home after playing 3 hours of basketball, sit down, watch SportsCenter, watch Stuart Scott, watch Rich Eisen, watch Keith Olbermann. So for me to sit here and broadcast this thing from my bedroom and be on the worldwide leader for 20 hours in a week was unbelievable. I mean, I can't speak it enough. What people don't realize, though, is it wasn't just the hosting. Like, it was a lot of I wish I had taken a behind-the-scenes video. If it wasn't for, you know, social distancing, I'm sure we would have, you know, captured some other stuff. Not to mention, we probably wouldn't be shooting it from my bedroom. But I was, you know, like having to use golf clubs to focus the camera because I was my own cameraman. I mean, there's a lot of behind the scenes to that. But again, like just how amazing that experience was, you know, it's something I'll never forget.
Sure. Well, it wouldn't be the NBA without some emotional outburst. Trae Young loses in the quarterfinals to DeAndre Ayton. And in the final minutes, you kind of went at him a little on Twitter for blowing a lead. He came back with you, right at you, with some feelings about gameplay. You had a bit of a beef with Boogie Cousins. Did you ever think that, you know, this was going to come down to you having actual beef with NBA players? I mean, come on, man. I assume you were a kid like me who bought 50 jerseys out of the East Bay catalog. Now here you are beefing with the guys who have jerseys for sale.
I mean, definitely not. But I mean, I think, again, it speaks to the power of our franchise and how much, like, culturally 2K has just impacted, you know, everyone. And again, you know, as a personification of it, it's very cool. But like, I think it speaks so amazingly to the power of our brand and how much we mean to the basketball culture and storyline.
Absolutely. So good news is you had the last laugh as Cousins lost by 52 to Andre Drummond. So don't worry about that. Between this and MLB The Show, they had a players league for baseball. People saw how much fun this can be, you know, showing off the personalities of the players and showing that esports isn't just for like nerdy Mountain Dew drinkers. Where do you think this fits in the future of sports, in your opinion?
You know, I think what is interesting about just virtual gaming is this, it's got this corollary to sports in one very big way. And I use this example a lot. If you watch Steph Curry play basketball and you become a Steph Curry fan, are you a fan? You know, you watch the Warriors to watch Steph Curry, your favorite player, play. Well, in e-gaming, you're really watching your favorite gamer, and you'd be also being able to kind of determine what he does. Like, you know, that's the great thing. If you could tell Steph Curry, hey, shoot a three instead of, you know, go in and take a layup. I think that's what the most fascinating thing about esports is, and it's continuing to kind of grow into this mass niche, and it's going to be very fascinating. The industry is just going to continue to push and make, you know, this thing that's already great just innovate, and I'm really looking forward to the future of it.
Well, most importantly, and this is a very heavy question, what shoes are you wearing during quarantine? What kicks get worn when you're just around the house with your dog?
Well, I wish I had some glamorous answer, but it's like UGG slippers that are pretty ugly.
Got it.
It's Travis Scott's birthday today, though, so I'm wearing some Travis Scott's today.
Okay, good. Stepping it up for Cactus Jack. We like to end with something a little positive and something stupid. First, for positivity, is there anything that during this time that people have taken on during the pandemic that you think maybe might be something we want to take on once there's a cure or a vaccine? Is there a practice you want to see live on?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that people, just humanity itself, has become a little bit closer as we've stood apart. Like, I think there's just a little bit more caring, you know, like, a lot of industries that you wouldn't think of have been impacted. And I think that a lot of people have stood up and celebrated those. I mean, obviously the doctors, the nurses, for sure. And that kind of thing should not be lost once, you know, we get through this thing. We should continue to celebrate those same people because they're the real heroes every single day.
Absolutely. All right. So I like to give some suggestions normally to our guests, things that they can take on during quarantine. But for you, I'm going to focus solely on suggestions for 2K21. Are you all right with that?
Please. Let's do it.
All right. First, this one feels very real, and I'm assuming you're already working on it. But we have to have a last dance challenge for Jordan, correct? I mean, we see all the games that are played in that final season, and maybe Carmen Electra shows up. I don't know, but something where we have to play through the ending of MJ's career.
I mean, we had the Jordan moments in 2K11, so you never know. I mean, the last dance has been super fascinating. Obviously, I'm that generation. I grew up on that, and getting to relive that and watch that, it's just been extraordinary television. And I'm glad you're enjoying it as well.
I love it. I love it. Secondly, quarantine golden moment cards. Okay. So for example, if LeBron has a good TikTok, if Devin Booker is seen with Kylie Jenner, like these are things you can get and it ups your playing, but it's quarantine stuff.
I like it. All right.
Okay. All right. Write that one down. Thirdly, your boy, I am your boy. Just so you know, your boy was a hidden character in NBA Live 2003. I had a song on it. This is, I know it's the game that cannot be spoken about, but it's a dead series. Let's be honest. You killed it. But I was a hidden character. My wife, an actress growing up, she played Topanga on Boy Meets World. We would like to show up.
Wait, your wife is Topanga from Boy Meets World?
She is. Danielle Fishel is her real name, but we have a child together. We are married.
Oh, wow.
And we will show up in 2K21. We want to be a married couple, so we're almost playing ourselves, but we'll take on fake names. And we're looking to set up a pyramid scheme to, like, financially ruin a player.
I'm sure that'll go over real well with everyone.
Like, I'm just like, we show up and we have an idea, like an investment that they can get into, like a land in Tucson, Arizona or something. And then you have to say yes or no to us. And then in the end, you realize we're scammers. We've never been to Arizona.
That's why everybody wants to be a video game designer. I see it. I get it.
We just want to break the law, and this is the only way we can do it. Thank you, man. I appreciate you coming on here. I know how busy you are.
No, man. We appreciate it. Thank you for your time, and everybody stay safe and healthy out there.
You too. After this, my conversation with former NFL safety, now neurosurgeon, Dr. Myron Roll. Right now, Feeding America is working tirelessly to ensure our most vulnerable populations, like students who are out of school, the elderly, individuals whose jobs are impacted, and low-income families, continue to have access to food and other needed resources during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Feeding America Food Bank Network is committed to serving communities and people facing hunger in America, and their greatest need is donations and support of local food banks. This podcast is committed to donating a portion of the proceeds from the show to Feeding America, and we hope that you can join us in this effort too. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org/COVID-19. And now, my conversation with Myron Roll. Hello, Dr. Roll.
Hi, yes.
I know our time is limited, so I want to get right to it. You've been on the front lines, obviously, at Mass General Hospital in Boston, sometimes working 24-hour shifts. I wanted to see what you can explain about what we're currently seeing and what you're working on, because there's so many mixed messages going on about where we are in flattening the curve and sort of the progress as a nation with COVID-19. And I wanted to know, as someone who's there, where are we with this?
So I think we're still in the fight. But what I will say is that I think, in general, our emergency department has sort of plateaued a little bit as far as the number of influx of patients that we had. I don't think the numbers are going disproportionately high, where we're being sort of overwhelmed with lack of equipment or lack of staff able to manage and triage these patients the best way possible. So I think that we're seeing a stable trend at this point.
Sure.
And I give credit, in my opinion, to our hospital administration and the leadership, even the leadership of specific departments that are directly involved in the COVID-19 fight, infectious disease, medicine, critical care, anesthesia, emergency room, these leading departments have done a great job of helping us put the pieces in place and make the aggressive, proactive moves so that we're ready and that we weren't overwhelmed. And we had enough staff, the right stuff, and the right space, basically, to take care of everything right now.
And I guess when we're seeing these people protesting in certain cities about, you know, let us out kind of stuff that they think it's unconstitutional, do you think flattening the curve has been successful overall? I mean, it's such a weird balance for people who aren't necessarily using their scientific brain to be like, well, I don't hear about it as much. Well, the pointing seems to be because we've been staying inside.
You're absolutely correct. I think that it's a two-pronged approach to get the country back to a sense of normalcy. The flattening the curve, the staying inside, social distancing, proper hygiene, lifestyle behavior modifications, all of these things are important to this fight. And this is what an everyday citizen can do, whether you're, you know, in suburban USA or in a, you know, major metropolitan city. This is the role that can be played by anyone, regardless of age, regardless of, you know, faith, demographic, you know, it doesn't discriminate on what you can do. But what I will say is that the other approach, as far as what we're doing in healthcare, there's still work to be done, and there's still tests to be done. There's still vaccinations to be made. There's still therapies that are being tested, tried, randomized control trials, making sure they're efficacious and safe, they're hitting the intended targets, and that they're not causing more harm than good. And there's still a lot of things happening in the science world that maybe you don't hear about on a day-to-day basis, but you have a lot of brilliant and intellectual people working expeditiously to make sure that we're getting on top of the facts and on top of the science that's behind this fight. So, you know, it's hard for people who are disconnected from the healthcare industry, who either don't work in it or don't see it or aren't related to somebody who works in it, to really know the personal narratives and the stories that are happening day to day with people who are facing COVID-19. But it's still an issue. And, you know, I think it's a little bit premature to say, let's just open everything back up and start our life normally, because we see it working, but we're not quite out of it yet. I would liken it to somebody who has had chronic back pain for a long time and they have some sort of compressive lesion in their spine, and we go and stabilize and fix their spine, and they say, wow, I don't feel any pain, I feel good the day after surgery, and they go out and try to run a marathon the next day.
Right.
They say, let me do everything that I could have done 10 years ago. But that's unhealthy, and that's not the best way to manage this thing. So I think we need to go low and slow and remember that there's still more work to be done on both ends.
It's a great analogy. You're a unique mixture of both the things we talk about on this podcast, both sports and this pandemic. What are the things you learned as a football player that you've been able to use now dealing with this emergency?
I think the ability to be flexible and adaptable and be able to change positions. You know, if I was asked to cover a tight end and then next thing you know, I have to ask to cover a running back who's killing us on a screen, you know, these are things that I just have to adapt and adjust on the fly on the football game and go back to my fundamentals and make the play. I have to be well-studied and well-prepared to be able to be flexible and versatile. And that's a part of what we're doing now as neurosurgery residents and other subspecialties that may not be directly related to COVID-19. They're being asked to do things outside of their typical scope of practice, but it's a team sport. Mm-hmm. Football has taught me that as well. You have to be able to be flexible. You have to be able to mitigate pressure. You have to stay disciplined and focused. And you also have to be aware of what's going on around you. I think awareness has helped me tremendously in football and now here. I'm aware that black and brown people have been disproportionately affected by COVID-19. I'm aware that I need to call it out and make sure that we respond to it as public health care officials and as healthcare workers and call attention to it so that the health disparity and gap that exists with this particular story within the COVID-19 larger story gets the right attention it needs.
Exactly. Neurologically, you know, that is your expertise. Like you said, you've been sort of adjusting your position. I wanted to ask you, I know a lot about neurology purely because they found, this is a whole nother podcast, but I have non-growing tumors in my midbrain. So I feel like I studied as a Jewish man, finding out I had brain tumors that didn't mean anything. I studied for about 7 years trying to figure out if I'm okay. So I ask you, I've been hearing a lot about the loss of taste and smell. Is that a neurological hit from COVID-19?
So yes, it is. The main issue with COVID-19 is that it loves angiotensin-converting enzyme spaces like the lungs, like the alveoli. And so it sits there, it incubates for a while, and then it may release a cytokine storm, which just kind of releases these cells and sort of overdrive and overproduction of these inflammatory cells, which makes it difficult to do anything. Breathe, taste, smell, you know, sort of just have normal mental status, right? I mean, all the confusion, like all of these things sort of come all in one as like a perfect storm when you're hit by this very infectious and viral illness.
And lastly, because I know we got to get you back to saving lives and such, I had read that a lot of cancer doctors and people who normally scan for things like that, they said that their work is down beyond percentages, that they just, people aren't focusing on getting those tests, or people, you know, hospitals are still having to deal with normal issues they do, you know, during the year when there's not a pandemic. Do you think at the end of all of this, there's going to be like a rush of diseases that weren't caught during this time? Am I making any sense?
You make a lot of sense. And I think that is an absolute reasonable postulation. I think that for us as neurosurgeons, you know, we've had to cancel or postpone a lot of our surgeries. And it's hard to think that a neurosurgical disease burden, like a kyphotic deformity in the spine where you can't walk, or a brain tumor that may be a meningioma, may be slow growing, but it's a brain tumor. And people think that that's elective in a way, but it's really hard to tell a patient, well, your brain tumor is just, you know, something you put off. It's hard to deal with that. It's hard to deal with not being able to walk every day. It's hard to deal with not having distal motor function because you have a brachial plexus injury or something like that. So these things that we're, you know, I think purposely and intelligently putting off to deal with our most vulnerable patients in COVID-19, creating that bed space and that personnel availability, mm-hmm. it's the right move. But I think the blowback will be, maybe some of these diseases get worse. Maybe they grow. Maybe they end up bleeding, and an elective case turns into an emergent case. And we know the stats say that if you do an emergent case in the middle of the night with different staff, not the right personnel, not the right equipment, your outcomes in surgery aren't as good as if it was optimized in an elective base, an elective setting. So I think there's going to be this other story that can be told with COVID-19 that, you know, for other services like neurosurgery, we'll have to deal with.
It's a very scary to think about. And lastly, as a football guy yourself, do you think September as a start date for the NFL makes any sense to you, and what you think about people feeling comfortable and safe inside of an arena or stadium? Where do you see those two things falling as someone who's on the front lines?
Yeah, I'd say that's kind of early and maybe ambitious to get out there. Of course, I'd love football to continue. I love the sport personally. It's done a lot for me. It's a sport that I love watching, and I mentor a lot of kids at Florida State who are playing currently. And I know that we all want to get back to something that takes us away from a major issue like this. Whenever there's a hurricane, a natural disaster, something that really rocks the fabric and the moral compass of a country, you know, sports is a way we can sort of escape and release. And it would be great that it could happen again. However, I think we need to be smart about doing it. You understand that you're in a communal setting, in a locker room, team meeting room, buses, you know, to get players where they need to get to, that could be potentially a knife for infection if they're all together. Mm-hmm. Getting fans in a stand where they're in close proximity and they're close to each other, and the human-to-human transmission could be increased and easily done. So that's an issue, too. I think the best barometer, and, you know, again, I'm not an epidemiologist, but just from my vantage point here in the hospital, mm-hmm. I think the best barometer to see whether it's safe to restart and resume some of these sports leagues will be a look at the hospitals and see what are the hospitalization numbers like for patients with COVID-19. Are the numbers going down? Are we consistently trending downwards? Are we turning those floors that we once had as COVID-19 floors, turning them back to their originally purposed floors? Are we using less oxygen and ventilator support? Are staff coming back? Are we allowing visitors to come back to the hospital? Are we bringing back non-essential workers to the hospital? Like, what are our individual hotspots of disease? What are they doing? If they're moving in the right direction, I think we can, okay, we may feel more comfortable, you know, going and starting this league again, because we want to start again, but maybe September's a little too early, but I'm hopeful that it can start shortly after that.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking to me, Dr. Roll, and thank you for everything you've done for everyone and the sick there in Boston, and just getting the information out there, and hopefully some sports listeners can follow up right now, because I feel like I'm so nervous when I see protesters out there telling us to start the world again, and I'm happy to hear your expertise on it.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate having me.
The No Sports Report is produced and distributed by Treefort Media. The show is executive produced by Kelly Garner, Lisa Ammerman, Matthew Kugler, and me, Jensen Karp. Tom Monahan is our senior audio engineer and sound supervisor, with production and editing by Jasper Leek. Additional production help from Tim Schauer, June Rosen, and Haley Mandelberg. Our theme music is composed by Spilkus. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please subscribe, rate us, and review us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. and please visit feedingamerica.org. If you're able to make a donation, any amount makes a difference, and you can learn more about other ways you can help on their website. For more information on the No Sports Report, links to the socials, and for show transcripts for our hearing impaired listeners, go to treefort.fm. Be safe and be well. The No Sports Report is a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.